It was late afternoon when Bone's horse topped the last ridge between the basin and Willow Creek. He pulled the horse to a stop and sat looking down for a while on the tiny Cheyenne village on the opposite side of the creek. There was very little activity, other than a few cook fires started before several of the teepees. A few old women trod back and forth to the water. A group of four men sat near one of the fires. There was no sign of a white man. If McCrae's wounds were minor, Bone might have spotted him outside one of the lodges. More serious, he could still be inside one of the lodges. Bone meant to find out which. With a kick of his heels, he started down the slope, angling across the ridge toward the camp at a fast walk. He had approached to within 100 yards before one of the men in the circle of four stood up and pointed toward him, alerting the others. Bone continued his steady approach, crossing the creek at a shallow ford, his rifle cradled in his arms. The entire village was alert to his arrival by this time and began to slowly converge on the four men by the fire. When he was within a distance of 20 yards, Bone held up one arm.
I come as a friend of the Cheyenne.
Come then. If you come in peace, you're welcome.
Red Moon and his friends watched the white man dismount. A curious man, he carried the look of a dark spirit. And Red Moon wondered if this was the man Little Star had fled the village to avoid.
What brings you to our humble village?
I come to find a man. A bad white man. I heard that he was in your village. He is wounded, and I have come to get him.
There's no white man in our village.
Is that a fact? This is a bad man, and the soldiers sent me to find him. He will do bad things to your people. I fear he is hiding in one of your teepees and is threatening your people. I'll look in your teepees to make sure he isn't here.
I say to you, there's no white man in our village. But you may look for yourself if it pleases you.
Bone stood looking into the chief's eyes for a few moments. Then he shifted his gaze to scan the passive faces of the people gathered around Red Moon.
All right. I believe what you say. But he was here. Where is he now?
He left here, but he did not say where he was going.
He was wounded. How bad was his wound?
Wounded bad. Maybe he went off to die.
Bone studied Red Moon's face intently. He couldn't be sure if the old chief was sincere or just an accomplished liar. He looked around him at the other old men standing by. Their faces were as devoid of expression as their chief's.
Which way did he go?
Red Moon pointed toward the way Bone had just come. Making no attempt to hide his disgust, Bone stepped up in the saddle and took his leave. It was useless to think about scouting around the camp to try to pick up McCrae's trail. There were too many damn tracks coming and going, and he wasn't familiar with the horse's tracks he wanted to follow. It was already late in the day, and he was not familiar enough with the trail to find his way in the dark. He decided to head back toward Whiskey Hill and ride until darkness caught up with him. If McCrae was still alive, he would pick up his trail somewhere. It was just a matter of time before he tracked him down. Bone was confident in the knowledge that he was the best. He was a born tracker, and he had never failed to bring his prey to ground. Less than a quarter mile away, on the opposite side of the ridge, Colt McCrae had made his camp upstream on Bitter Branch. The cold wind had freshened, and he had built his fire in a shallow dry wash after hobbling Buck. Looking up at the clouds before he slept, he guessed that it was likely that he might wake up to a blanket of snow. The night passed peacefully. It was still a while before sunup when Colt was awakened by a soft dusting of snow. He took some of the limbs he had gathered the night before and rebuilt his fire. It was still not light enough to get started, but he figured by the time he made some coffee and cooked a little bacon over the fire, it would be. He was satisfied to see that the snow had not amounted to much. The wind was still up, so it was probably responsible for moving the snow clouds along. On the opposite side of the ridge, Bones' eyes flickered open, and he lay there listening. Like a hungry timber wolf, he sensed something. But there was no sound other than the patient labor of the stream. He rose on one elbow, realizing at once what had alerted his senses.
Smoke.
His curiosity aroused now. He looked to the top of the pines to determine the wind direction. He couldn't see smoke, but the wind was coming from the west, causing a downdraft after it crossed the ridge, and there was no doubt in his mind that the scent of a campfire was being carried on that wind.
Could be Indians, or a hunting party maybe. Best take a look on the other side of that ridge.
He took only enough time to saddle his horse. Bone picked his way carefully up the dark slope to within a few dozen yards of the top before dismounting. He crawled the rest of the way. Settling on his stomach, he looked down the slope. Unable to spot the source of the smoke, he scanned the shadowy banks of the stream on both sides, straining to see in the pre-dawn. Convinced that there was someone below him, he determined to wait out the sunrise to see who it was. The light of a new day gradually began to empty the gullies of their dark shadows, although it would still be a while before the sun climbed high enough to illuminate the cloudy sky. Colt reached for the coffee pot, now boiling busily on the fire. Suddenly jumped as if alive, a split second before his hand touched the handle. A bullet hole drilled neatly through its middle. Colt dived away from the fire, rolling over against the edge of the gully. He crawled over to retrieve the rifle he had left beside his saddle, figuring his assailant could probably not see him but was just hoping for a lucky shot. Quickly crawled farther down the dry wash to take a position behind a brace of young pines. Then, with eyes straining to search the slope above him, he watched for some movement in the shadows or a muzzle flash. With no clue as to where the shots had come from, there was nothing he could do but wait.
Damn it! Son of a bitch moved! I had him dead in my sights!
Bone could no longer see his prey, and he wasn't sure if one of his shots had found the target or not. Wasting no time speculating, he scrambled over the top of the ridge and made his way from one spot of cover to the next, descending the slope as fast as he possibly could. His main concern at this point was to prevent his prey's attempt to escape. He reached a point halfway down the hill, just in time to get a glimpse of the buckskin horse disappearing under the bank of the stream.
He's running!
He made a dash for a rock formation overhanging the water. 40 yards downstream from the spot where Bone had taken cover, Colt dropped down behind a grassy hummock on the bank. With his horse safely under the cover of the stream bank, he scouted the slope above him. He saw nothing for a few seconds. Then, there was a sudden movement in the corner of his eye, and he jerked his head around in time to see his assailant a step or two away from an outcropping rock near the bank. He raised his rifle, but there was no time to take dead aim. There was no doubt in Colt's mind that the gunman stalking him was the man called Bone. He showed no sign of retreating after his first attempt to bushwhack him failed, unlike the typical riffraff Drummond hired. Colt looked around him at the spot in which he had landed. It would not have been his first choice for a defensive position. The stream widened out at that point before converging again to take a sharp turn around a stand of willows some 30 yards behind him. If Bone decided to work back up the slope a ways, he might very easily pin Colt down against the bank. He had no sooner given birth to the thought than it apparently occurred to Bone as well. Suddenly, there he was, but only for a second, as he dashed from the rocks and dived into a clump of pines a few yards up the slope. Colt's shot kicked up dirt harmlessly behind Bone's boot heel. Trying to guess what his adversary was up to, he followed the belt of thick pines with his eyes. There was a narrow ledge about 3/4 of the way up the slope, just beyond the pines.
I can't stay here. If he gets up on that ledge above me, I won't be able to hide or run.
If he made a run for it downstream, he'd present his back as a broad target for 30 or 40 yards before reaching the cover of the willows, where the stream made a turn. The only option left was to ride hell for leather back upstream to the rock formation Bone had just vacated, and gamble on the notion that Bone was still moving along toward the ledge. It was impossible to know for sure because of the solid screen of pine trees that led up to the ledge. One thing for certain, the closer Bone got to that ledge, the more the angle improved to give him a clear shot at anything in the stream bed.
Bone's horse has to be on the other side of this ridge. If I beat him back to his horse, he'll be on foot.
Colt made up his mind. With Colt lying low on the horse's neck, they raced away up the shallow stream toward the rock formation. The quick retreat must have taken Bone by surprise, for no shots rang out after him. Once he found cover, Colt pulled his horse to a stop while he studied the slope before him. In the morning sunlight now, he could see Bone's tracks where he had descended the hill. He nudged Buck into motion. Little did Colt know that Bone, too, had thought of his horse left near the top of the slope, and he started back up the hill as quickly as he could manage. Since he was farther up the slope to begin with, he was just able to win the race with the man on the horse. The horse obediently dashed towards the whistle, out of harm's way.
Damn, I hadn't counted on that.
Yeah!
Colt reached the top in time to see the blue roan trotting away across the brow of the ridge. He didn't wait. Throwing caution to the wind, he went after the roan at a gallop, hoping to get a shot at Bone. He charged over the top of the ridge to discover he had ridden headlong into an ambush. Colt saw Bone kneeling, waiting, his rifle aimed at him, and he knew he had but one option. Colt's still tender ribs protested the rough landing on the hillside. Struggling to get to his hands and knees, he found he couldn't breathe. In spite of the pain, he forced himself to scramble back below the rim of the ridge. He collapsed behind a low evergreen shrub. It offered no real protection other than a visual screen, but he had no time for anything better. After a few more seconds, he felt his chest relax and his lungs began to take in air again. He crawled over to the edge of the shrubs. Bone was bound to come over the top of the ridge after him, so he trained his rifle on the spot where he figured him to show. Colt crowded even closer to the edge of the pine shrubs in an effort to broaden his field of fire, his gaze still focusing upon the spot where he thought Bone would show. When there was no sign of the hired killer for a few minutes, Colt decided that Bone might be trying to flank him. Hearing something moving in the brush to the left, he shifted suddenly, set to pull the trigger. He discovered he was about to shoot his horse. In less than an instant, he shifted back again when Bone rose to shoot. Bone's bullet passed so close to Colt's ear that he was sure he felt the breeze from it. Colt saw his bullet strike Bone in the arm. Colt dropped and cautiously inched his way up the slope, expecting to be met at any second with a bullet. He knew he had hit Bone, but he was reasonably certain it had not been a fatal wound. Peering over the top, he was surprised to see Bone on horseback, galloping away. Springing up on one knee, he attempted to get off a shot, but there were too many trees in between. He knew very little about the man who hunted him, but his instincts told him that Bone had not quit the fight, so Colt turned to go catch his horse.
Yeah!
colt bent low in the saddle as Buck gave chase. There was no need to press the horse for speed. The buckskin understood the game, and Colt knew he would falter before he willingly gave up the race. Bone was obviously looking for a place to hide, probably intent upon reversing the roles to become once again the stalker. One thing Bone didn't know, however, was that Colt had spent much of his boyhood roaming these foothills of the Laramie Mountains. Both horses began to tire as Bone galloped down a grassy draw toward a line of low hills to the west.
Damn, Buck! It won't be long before this race will be at a slow walk.
At the base of the first in the line of hills, there was a narrow gulch that divided it from the second hill. Colt knew the place. When he was a boy, he had followed a deer into the gulch. He figured Bone would seek cover there. It appeared to be a perfect bastion to hold off an attack. But Colt knew there was a back door to that gulch. He had lost that deer so many years ago. As Colt had anticipated, Bone drove into the gulch, coming out of the saddle before his horse had pulled to a stop, crouching beside the entrance. Bone's shot caused Colt to veer off to the north and press Buck for one more burst of speed. It was just about all the weary horse had left, and Colt dismounted as soon as he reached the cover of the trees at the base of the hill. Colt grabbed some extra cartridges from his saddlebags and started up the hill on the run. If he was quick enough, he should be able to get in behind his adversary before Bone knew what he was up to. Climbing up the side of the slope, in some places so steep he had to use his hands, Colt made his way through the rocks toward a thick clump of pine trees wedged between two huge boulders. Those trees were considerably larger than when he had lost the deer many years before, concealing the opening even more, but he was certain this was the passage. Once through the trees, he would find himself on a short ledge above the gulch. Pushing up to the trees, he struggled to keep from sliding on the loose gravel before the gap in the boulder. Finally reaching a point where he could grasp one of the trunks with his free hand, he pulled himself up on the ledge and into the trees. Moving quickly between the tightly crowded pines, he emerged onto an open shelf at the top of the gulch to discover that his adversary had been scouting it from the other side. Both shots went wide. Colt fell backward to land on his back between two small pines. As soon as he hit the ground, he set himself as best he could to fire again. Bone appeared on the ledge, abandoning his rifle now, two pistols drawn, ready to finish what he thought was a wounded man. Bone staggered backward with the impact, losing his footing on the ledge and tumbling back down into the gulch. Colt scrambled to his feet to the edge of the ledge. Some 30 feet below him, Bone managed to drag himself behind a sizable rock shelf, causing Colt to hesitate before rushing recklessly down the slope after him. He was certain he had put two slugs in the man, and he was anxious to end it, but not to the point of exposing himself carelessly. A wounded bear was a dangerous bear. He stopped to decide what his next move should be. Meanwhile, Bone lay behind the rock shelf, feeling his blood seeping out to soak his shirt. He was too stunned to realize that he was experiencing the trauma he had administered to his many victims. His only thought now was to somehow extract himself from this certain death situation. Clutching his two pistols, he looked behind him toward his horse, wondering what chance he had of reaching it. Struggling to pull himself back to the edge of the shelf, he peeked around the end in an effort to spot his antagonist.
Damn it!
His chances of running to that horse were non-existent.
I ain't licked yet. The horse could come to me.
The weary roan gelding stood lathered with head down, steam still rising from its body. It rolled its eyes in Bone's direction, but it did not respond. Still, the horse would not come.
Damn you!
Colt lay flat against the ledge. On the ground beside him lay the rifle Bone had dropped when he had pulled his pistols. It was the Winchester his father had willed to him. He quickly picked it up, laying his other rifle aside.
He's probably reloading. What the hell?
With the rifle his father had left him in hand, he leaped off the ledge, landed on the steep shale-covered slope some 6 or 7 feet below, sliding wildly down the loose gravel to the bottom. By the time Colt scrambled to his feet, Bone was standing with his pistol aimed directly at Colt's head.
Hold it right there, damn you. You raise that rifle, and I'll put a bullet right between your eyes. You son of a bitch. You put a couple holes in me. Ain't no man ever done that before. You made me earn my money. I'll give you that.
Colt stood motionless, looking Bone in the eye.
You never finished loading that pistol. I ain't sure you ain't sitting on an empty chamber. I know my rifle's ready to fire.
Bone involuntarily glanced at the revolver in his hand. That was all the opening Colt needed. Bone staggered backward, his pistol aimed toward the sky. Colt walked up to stand over the body. It was the first opportunity he had to study the man who had come to kill him. A tall man, his face was drawn into an angry scowl in death. His eyes, deep-set and dark, peered up at Colt as if staring at him from hell itself. Colt drew his skinning knife. Kneeling beside the sinister corpse, he cut off Bone's long, greasy ponytail with a single eagle feather interwoven in it. After taking the late hired killer's weapons, he took his boot and rolled the body over, leaving it to the buzzards.
Now Drummond will have to stand alone.
Where the hell is Bone? And what happened to Brownie? Rafe Wilson thinks McCray is probably dead, but I can't count on that. The son of a bitch has a habit of showing up to kill my men.
Unaware that J.D. Townsend had fled the territory, Drummond rode to Whiskey Hill to order the sheriff to form a posse to hunt down Colt McCray. Charlie Ware, one of Drummond's 3 remaining men, was accompanying him. One of the last men Drummond had hired, Charlie came highly recommended as an obedient brain with a fast trigger on an indiscriminate gun. Charlie was the only hand he had left who had not as yet failed him. Arriving at the sheriff's office, Drummond didn't even need to dismount to see the door was padlocked.
No doubt he's at that damn diner. Come on!
They headed for the Whiskey Hill kitchen. Pearl Murray was taking a break, drinking a cup of coffee at the counter while gazing out the window.
Uh-oh. Here comes trouble.
What is it?
Pearl pointed outside. Mary looked out the window, too. In the years that Mary had worked at the diner, Drummond had not crossed the threshold on more than 2 or 3 occasions. Seeing him headed this way now brought a feeling of deep foreboding.
Frank Drummond. Better tell them meeting in the back room.
Let's not. Let's let them find out for themselves. They ought to be tickled to have him come to the meeting.
Drummond strode forcefully through the door, followed by Charlie Ware, barely noticing the 2 women standing at the end of the counter. Pearl grinned and winked at Mary.
Howdy there, Mr. Drummond!
Drummond headed through the kitchen straight for the room in back of the dining area. He stood searching the faces of the men seated around the table.
Where's J.D.?
J.D.'s not here.
I can see that. Where is he?
Well, we don't rightly know. He just decided to leave. It's anybody's guess where he went.
That's a fact. J.D.'s lit out and he ain't likely to come back, so we're left without no sheriff. Since your man shot Stoney Yates.
Drummond frowned at the mention of Bone.
But we're discussing the business of naming a new sheriff in this meeting.
Hell, I can end your meeting right quick. Charlie here is your new sheriff. He's highly qualified, and I give him my endorsement.
Charlie Ware's sullen expression turned into a moronic grin. Roy glanced at Oscar Anderson, but Oscar hurriedly looked away. He received the same reaction from Raymond Fletcher. Only one, Barney Samuels, the blacksmith, met his gaze, and he gave him a solemn nod.
First thing Sheriff Ware is going to do is going to get a posse and run Colt McRae to ground.
Well, Mr. Drummond, we appreciate the suggestion, and I assure you we'll certainly consider your candidate for sheriff. There'll be some other candidates to consider, I'm sure, and we'll try to do what's best for the town.
I don't make suggestions. What I said was, Charlie here is your new sheriff. Now, who don't understand that?
Drummond glared directly at Oscar Anderson.
I don't reckon there's any objection to that. Mr. Ware's probably a good man.
All right, then. We're just wasting time here. The sooner we hunt McRae down, the faster things are gonna get back to normal here.
Now, wait a minute here, folks. Things can't be decided just like that. The town council has to discuss the problem of replacing JD with a new sheriff, and we have to vote on it. Then the council has to offer a job to whoever we decide is best qualified.
Outside the door, the two women, who had inched up close to eavesdrop on the meeting, backed away as if expecting the room to explode. It was as if time had stopped. No one dared move as all eyes at the table shifted toward Frank Drummond.
Samuels, ain't it? I want to make sure I remember your name. Anybody else hard of hearing? I said the matter of the sheriff is settled. The next order of business is to raise a posse.
Barney's face drained of color, his courage fading away as he realized he had been marked as a result of his comment. Charlie Ware stepped over closer to the table to smirk at him.
Barney meant no offense, Mr. Drummond. We're just trying to do things according to the rules, you understand, so they'll be legal.
I'm done talking. I want the key to that padlock on the jailhouse door.
Drummond glared down at Whitworth, his hand extended, waiting for the key. The mayor reached into his vest pocket and produced it.
This ain't according to parliamentary procedure.
Drummond took the key and handed it to Charlie Ware.
Here, Sheriff, go on over to the jail and get yourself a badge. Then go down to the saloon and round up a posse. Tell them there'll be a cash reward for the man who shoots Colt McRae.
With his malignant grin spread wide across his face, Charlie took the key and, with a condemning wink at Barney Samuels, turned and left the room.
I don't like what I saw here today. Let me make myself clear. I'll burn this damn town to the ground if you people get in my way. I don't want to hear about any more of these town meetings. I'm remembering every one of you men sitting around this table. You think about that.
Drummond stood glaring down at him for a few moments more, then turned and left the room as well. Roy looked balefully at Barney Samuels, who shook his head in defeat. They both then turned to stare at Oscar Anderson and Raymond Fletcher.
We really didn't have a hell of a lot of choice. We need a sheriff, and we didn't really have a man for the job.
That ain't the point, Oscar. We need to get Frank Drummond's bloody fingers off our necks. If we don't do something to stop him, he's gonna soon make Whiskey Hill his own little town.
Hell, it's damn near been that way already for the past 2-3 years.
Bonnie's right. It was bad enough when J.D. was sheriff. At least he was one of us. Now look at what we've got. Charlie, whatever his name was, nothing but a hired gun hand. It's time we stood up together to take our town back. It's time to revive the Vigilance Committee, only this time without Frank Drummond's gunman.
Now, that's easy enough to say, but we're talking about going up against Drummond's professional killers, and I, for one, think we're outmatched in that department.
Damn it, Fletcher, we've all got to stick together on this. We need to talk to Turk Coolidge and Judge Blake to make sure we have their support. You know, the judge might be the one to tell Drummond that he's the one supposed to appoint a new sheriff.
I think you're right. Judge Blake ought to be the one setting Drummond straight on that. It ain't up to us.
Hell, Oscar, the judge is getting too damn old to tell anybody what to do. Drummond don't understand talk anyway. We need to fight fire with fire.
The mayor shifted his gaze around to fall on each man there. It was not a reassuring sight. The reality of their situation struck him then. Drummond was too strong for these peaceful men.
What about Colt McCrae?
They all turned to see Pearl Murray standing in the doorway.
What about Colt McCrae?
Pearl, you and Mary get on back to the kitchen. This ain't no concern for women folk.
He's the only one I've seen around here man enough to stand up to Frank Drummond. If you stay out of his way long enough, he might take care of your problem for you. Hell, you ought to make him sheriff.
You know, that ain't a bad idea. Hell, him and Drummond are already at war with each other. And from the way Drummond's been losing men, Colt looks to be getting the best of him.
Maybe that's the way things were going till Drummond hired that man Bone to take care of McCrae. Besides, we can't have an ex-convict for a sheriff.
Well, we got a damn outlaw for one now. At least Colt's done his time and paid for his crimes.
I still think we're going to have to form a vigilance committee to confront Drummond. I'll talk to Turk Coolidge and see where he stands.
Why in hell would I want to do that? Frank Drummond accounts for over half of my business. Him and his cowhands. Just what are you figuring on doing to him anyway? Take my advice and just let things go their natural way and everything will be all right.
Have you met the new sheriff?
Yeah. He was in here looking for men to ride in a posse to go after Colt McCrae. He's a rough-looking son of a bitch, I'll say that for him. Gonna be a hell of a change from old J.D.
Did he get up a posse?
Yeah. Well, five men signed up. They were all drunk with no money to buy any more whiskey. Maybe they'll be sober enough to see straight tomorrow when they're supposed to strike out for the Broken M, but I doubt there's a steady hand among them.
Frank Drummond stepped down from the Appaloosa gelding he rode and handed the reins to Rafe Wilson.
Evening, Mr. Drummond. What happened to Charlie?
He got himself a new job. He'll be staying in town.
He climbed up the steps to the porch, but he stopped short when he saw what appeared to be a small critter of some kind on the door.
What the hell?
He pulled out a match and struck it on his boot. Holding the match up to the door, he recognized what he was looking at. A long, greasy length of hair with an eagle feather intertwined. He turned back to Rafe.
Damn you! How does somebody ride up to my front door and nobody sees him?
Who?
Drummond threw the offending ponytail at Rafe.
Colt McCrae, damn it, that's who! That son of a bitch! Rafe, as soon as you put my horse away, saddle yours. I want you to ride into Whiskey Hill and tell Charlie to meet me at the south end of Pronghorn Canyon at sunup in the morning.
Yes, sir. Where do I go to find Charlie?
In the sheriff's office. Tell him to bring that posse with him. We're gonna clean out a hornet's nest once and for all.
Vance McCrae painfully made his way to the kitchen table. And he sank heavily into a chair held for him by his wife. It was the first time Vance had been able to stand without help since he'd been shot.
Look who's strong enough to eat at the table this morning, Rena.
The Cheyenne woman smiled and nodded.
Yeah, you ought to be ready to go back to work in a day or two.
I feel like I ought to do something around here to help out.
Oh, we're doing all right. We got cattle, I mean yours and mine, scattered all over Hell's Half Acre, but it don't matter a hell of a lot. Drummond's short of help, and the men he's got are spending most of their time watching us instead of worrying about stealing cattle. Although Tom says there ain't nobody up on the ridge this morning.
I need to get back to take care of my place.
No, you best stay here. We're a lot better off together, and Drummond knows it. And I figure it's the only thing that kept him from making his move. With you and me and your two men, we can match him in numbers. But if we split up, he's got the advantage.
Now, I reckon you're right. But I still ain't much use to us.
Well, we still got Rena.
Bert looked at the Cheyenne woman and winked. She nodded emphatically, returning his smile. Frank Drummond sat impatiently on his Appaloosa gelding, his remaining gunman, Fred Singleton, beside him. The five men Charlie had signed up were a sorry-looking lot, all obviously hungover from the prior night's drinking. But they had guns.
All right. Sheriff Ware has probably told you we're going after Colt McCrae. And that's the main thing. But to get to him, we're gonna have to go through the rest of the McCrays. And that's what you're getting $2 a day for. We're gonna wipe out the whole lot of these murdering coyotes and burn their damn nest to the ground.
The sheriff says there's extra bonus money for the shot that takes Colt McCrae, but he didn't say how much.
That's a fact. $50 to the man who gets him. Colt is the most important one to kill, but for the good of the town, the whole bunch of lowdown murderers have to be wiped out. Men, women, and children. It ain't no different than wiping out a nest of scorpions.
He prodded the Appaloosa and led out to the south.
Come on, then. We got work to do.
Bert McCrae looked up to see Bill Wilkes flailing his horse's flanks as he charged down the east ridge at breakneck speed. Bert lay aside the bridle he'd been in the process of mending. Tom Mosley climbed over the top rail of the corral to join him.
They're coming! Drummond! Drummond and a gang of riders are heading this way, and they look like they mean business.
You old son of a bitch himself! How many?
I counted 9 of them.
9, huh? That Drummond must have hired some extra guns. How far?
On the other side of the ridge, following the creek.
Well, that don't give us much time, does it? All right, let's get back to the house. Bill, turn your horse in the corral. We'll stand him off from the house. Tom, grab a couple of buckets from the barn. Fill them with water. We may need it if this is what it looks like.
I don't reckon they're coming to apologize. We might need more than 2 buckets.
When Drummond's force of 9 men were halfway down the ridge, he signaled a halt while he surveyed the house and outbuildings below. No one was moving about. He figured they'd been spotted.
They're holed up in there, waiting for us. Charlie, since you're the sheriff, I'll let you show them we mean business. See that door open a crack? Let's see if you can put a bullet through that crack.
Charlie grinned obligingly, raised his rifle, and took aim.
Well, hadn't we ought to tell him why we're here? Give Colt a chance to surrender?
Didn't you hear me back there when I said they're all murderers and thieves? We didn't come here to talk. We came here to kill scavengers. Shoot, Charlie.
Charlie was not accurate enough to put a bullet through the small opening in the door, but he splintered the frame beside it. The door opened a crack.
Damn you, Drummond! There's women and children in here! You come for Colt, goddammit, he ain't here!
Send everybody outside! I got the new sheriff here, and we'll search the house and see for ourselves! Everybody outside!
You go to hell!
All right, boys, you heard him. I gave him a chance to come out, and he wants a fight. Well, we'll have to give it to him. We'll shoot that place to pieces. Charlie, you take 3 men with you and find some cover on yonder side of the house. Maybe in the barn, wherever you can get a clear shot. Rafe, take the other 3 and find you a spot on the other side. And boys, don't spare the ammunition.
Drummond turned his horse and rode until he came to a narrow break with a clump of pine.
Yeah, here's a good place to watch and stay out of the line of direct fire.
The siege carried on for more than an hour with no way of telling what damage the riders had inflicted. Charlie Ware was sure that there was a decrease in the return fire from the house, but he couldn't be sure anyone had been hit. He started to tell the man next to him to move around more to the front of the house when the man suddenly reared up. He turned to warn Fred Singleton to keep behind cover. Fred dropped his rifle and fell face first onto the ground. Charlie Ware looked over to one of the volunteers who had taken cover behind a wagon.
God damn, we're in a bad place. Let's get to better cover.
Not waiting for the man's response, Charlie retreated to the barn behind him. Once safely inside, he looked back to see the volunteer crumple to the ground as soon as he stepped out from behind the wagon. Moving cautiously, he went past the empty stalls to the back door. Outside again, he was surprised to see a buckskin horse standing saddled among the cottonwoods by the creek.
What the hell?
Hey, Charlie.
Charlie Ware whirled around to confront Colt McCrae.
Hey, they've quit shooting on this side!
With bullets still flying from the other side, Bert crawled over to Tom.
Damn, you're right.
He waited a few moments, then eased up to the windowsill to hazard a peek.
Yeah, there's a dead man laying by the wagon. I can't see nobody else. You must have hit him.
I don't see how. I don't have time to aim at anything.
Well, he is sure as hell dead. But keep your eyes peeled. Maybe they're up to something.
Rafe Wilson paused when he realized that the firing from the other side had stopped. He wasn't sure what it meant. He glanced down the line of volunteers, still firing away blissfully from the cover of a hog back between the house and the ridge. He crawled up out of the gully to see if he could get a better look. The bullet that struck him in the shoulder spun him around, staggering him. Colt's second bullet smashed into his breastbone, dropping him to the ground. The bloody sight of Rafe's demise was enough to dishearten the men behind the hogback. They stopped shooting at the house and paused to look around, trying desperately to see where the fatal shot had come from.
Let's get the hell out of here!
Fearful for their lives, they crawled over the top and scrambled away through the brush, all three in full flight back to their horses. By the time Colt emerged from the gullies, they were effectively out of range and galloping away.
What?
Frank Drummond could not believe what he was hearing. Perplexed by the sudden cessation of rifle fire, he strained to see what had caused it. Unable to tell from his position in the pine trees, he could only wait to see what developed. To his horror, he saw Bert, Tom, and Bill filing out of the house and running to the barn. Then, Colt McCrae stepped up on the hogback that had shielded Rafe and the three members of the posse.
Sons of bitches.
Drummond raised his rifle. The shot missed, kicking up dirt near Colt's feet. Colt turned unhurriedly, almost as if he were invulnerable to bullets. The deliberate manner in which he stood, searching the ridge, fearlessly scanning the cuts and hogbacks, struck a sudden fear in Frank Drummond's soul. Colt dropped to one knee and fired at the spot.
Damn!
Drummond almost stumbled over his own feet in his haste to escape. Stepping up in the saddle, he whipped the Appaloosa mercilessly as he galloped out the other side of the thicket. Frank Drummond rejected his first instinct to flee to his ranch because of the thought of having to face alone the relentless killing machine that had decimated his band of outlaws. Daring to look behind him, he glimpsed the buckskin climbing up out of the series of gullies. It was enough to make him decide to head for town. There was enough of the bully's confidence left in him to believe he could find safety among the men of the town council. Frank Drummond banged open the front door of the Whiskey Hill kitchen.
Where are they? They're always here. Where are they?
Who?
The goddamn town council, that's who!
In the back room, where they are every afternoon.
All five members of the town council gaped at the door as the owner of the Rocking D burst into the room, rifle in hand.
Get your guns ready! That murderer is on his way here. You're all members of the sheriff's posse now. When he comes in that door, we're gonna shoot him down!
What? Where's the new sheriff and his posse?
Dead, damn it! That's what I've been telling you! He's killed them all! And now, we've got to stop him!
Drummond waved his arms frantically toward the still-seated council members.
Get up, damn it! Get a gun in your hand! We'll meet him in the street!
I don't have a gun with me!
Me neither!
We ain't members of no posse! I don't know what's going on, but it ain't up to the council to do anything about it!
Drummond leveled his rifle at Barney.
You're wearing a gun, and you'll stand with me, by God, or I'll shoot you down right here and now. You're wearing a sidearm, too, Coolidge. Get on your goddamn feet!
Using the barrel of his rifle to gesture, he motioned for them all to rise.
We'll stand together against this murderer, before he destroys our homes and families. Now, let's all go out in the street to face this convict and protect our town.
They all did as they were told. Drummond stopped his reluctant squad at the front door.
I know you got guns in here, Anderson.
He's got a shotgun and a pistol in the kitchen. I'll get them.
Mary disappeared through the kitchen bat wings. She reappeared a moment later, carrying a double-barrel shotgun and a revolver. She handed a weapon to Oscar and Fletcher, receiving an incredulous look from Oscar. She stepped quickly back out of the way, bravely meeting the approving gaze of Frank Drummond. He, in turn, drew his revolver from the holster and gave it to Roy Whitworth, the only remaining member without a weapon.
Now we'll show this bastard who owns this town. Just remember, I'm standing behind you with my rifle in case anybody gets rabbit's feet.
Drummond shooed him out the door, then followed, pulling it closed. Mary smiled as she pulled two shotgun shells and six pistol cartridges from the pocket of her apron. Rounding the corner of the blacksmith shop, Colt stopped when he discovered a line of six armed men awaiting him in the street. In the middle, and slightly behind, Frank Drummond stood. He had evidently managed to organize another posse, this one with faces Colt recognized. They were the crowd that had sent him to prison.
So be it. I'll damn sure get Drummond before I go down.
The line facing him looked less than committed. He immediately dismissed Fletcher and Anderson, as well as Roy Whitworth. When the shooting started, he counted on wild shots from all three of them, or no shots at all. His rifle in a ready position, he started walking toward the waiting firing squad. But he stopped when he heard horses coming up behind him. Ready to defend himself from that quarter, he turned to see three riders coming toward him. The leader, wearing a derby cocked to one side and held in place by a red bandana tied under his chin. Drummond realized the odds were no longer in his favor when Bert galloped into view, followed by Tom Mosley and Bill Wills. He shoved Roy Whitworth aside and raised his rifle. His reluctant posse bolted, running for their lives. He stood firm. Colt spun back and dropped to one knee. Drummond looked down at the hole in his coat, his eyes wide with fear and disbelief. He lurched backward, looking around him for the support that had already deserted him. Then he turned and staggered for safety inside the Whiskey Hill kitchen. Stumbling drunkenly, he willed himself to remain on his feet long enough to hold on to the counter for support. Once behind the counter, he supported his rifle on it and aimed it at the door. Mary's fingers vibrated from the impact of the heavy iron skillet against Drummond's skull. Colt came through the door then, to find a trembling young woman staring down at Drummond, terrified that he might get up again. At the kitchen batwings, Pearl stood, a butcher knife in hand, eyes as wide as saucers. Colt quickly checked the body to make sure Drummond was dead. Then he turned to face the two women.
Are you all right, Mary?
Mary nodded.
Yeah, we're all right. Remind me to wash that damn skillet before we cook breakfast in the morning.
He was gonna shoot you when you came in the door.
I expect so.
Mary stood gazing at him for a long moment before she noticed the blood soaking through the buckskin shirt he wore.
Colt McCray, you're bleeding again.
Yeah, I caught one in the shoulder.
Mary handed the frying pan to Pearl, then made Colt sit down in a chair while she looked after the wound.
You're going to the doctor with this one, and then you're going to let it get well before you make it worse again.
I might need someone to look after me to make sure.
She looked up to meet Colt's gaze and held it for a moment.
Oh, yeah. If anybody ever needed looking after, it's him.
Frank Drummond had been gone 2 days. Bert McCray, along with Tom and Bill, rode over to the Rockin' D to see what had to be done. They rode up to the ranch house to find Alice Flynn sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch.
I was wondering when somebody was going to show up.
Yes, ma'am, Miss Flynn. Somebody should have been out here sooner. You out here all alone like this. I'm sorry about that.
Drummond dead?
Yes, ma'am. Died of a gunshot wound in the Whiskey Hill kitchen.
Well, that figures. He ran with a rank crowd of riffraff. Had to happen sooner or later.
Yeah. Well, I expect you must be wanting to get away from this lonely stretch of prairie. Maybe move into Whiskey Hill where there's other folks around, huh?
Hell no! Why would I want to move into the middle of that tomfoolery? I've been living alone for more than 15 years. Same as living with Frank Drummond. No thank you, sir. I'll get by fine living in one of the line shacks or the smokehouse. I don't need nobody around me.
Tom and Bill exchanged glances of astonishment at the salty old gal's declaration.
Well, now, seems to me that with Drummond gone, you're the only rightful heir to his estate. So I reckon this house, this ranch, belongs to you now. Now, you're gonna need some help running this place. I mean, it's bigger than the Broken M and the Bar M put together. Until you can hire on some hands, well, I figure me and my nephew can help out. We'll be short-handed for sure, but we'll manage through the winter. I expect we'll lose a few head to wolves and coyotes, but we'll do all right. That sound all right to you?
Although the facial expression was not obvious, Tom Mosley would brag afterward that he was one of the only three on the face of the earth to have ever seen Alice Flynn smile.
We can help each other out. Now, what do you think? It seems like a hell of a lot for a woman to take on.
She got up from the rocking chair and walked over to the edge of the porch. With spit in the palm of her hand, she extended it toward Bert.
I'll get Judge Blake to handle the legal part of it.
She nodded as they shook hands. Tom and Bill were left to look after the ranch, while Bert and Vance, along with Susan, rode into Whiskey Hill for a meeting Roy Whitworth called to discuss the future of the town. Sammy begged to stay with Uncle Tom and Uncle Bill, which was fine with Vance since it would be far past Sammy's bedtime by the time they returned.
Pearl, can we get cups of coffee all around?
That's what I'm here for. Be right back.
I'm glad you folks decided to come to the meeting. We've been talking about a lot of things that need taken care of if we're gonna build this town into a respectable place to live and work. Now that Frank Drummond is gone, you folks, along with Miss Alice Flynn, of course, are the major landowners outside of town.
We were wondering if Colt was planning on staying around now that the trouble with Drummond's is done. We ain't seen him since the shootout.
Yeah, can't say for sure. You ain't seen him because he's gone back to that Cheyenne camp. Mary Simmons went with him. Said she was staying with him this time till he healed up proper. Now, Colt wouldn't have come to the meeting anyway.
He's left me short-handed. Pearl's had to do all the work with Mary gone.
Yeah, the way I heard it, she didn't give Colt much choice in the matter.
We sent word through Pearl for Colt to come to the meeting. Town ain't been too friendly to him since he got out of prison. I mean, I don't reckon I blame him for not coming.
In fact, some of us think we could do a lot worse than Colt to take J.D.'s job.
Colt is sheriff. No, I don't know about that.
We only talked about it. I don't know if we could have a sheriff that's been to prison.
Hell, he didn't shoot that bank guard. He was just involved in the robbery.
Well, he was part of the bank robbery. That's pretty serious.
He wasn't even there when it happened.
Why do you think that?
I don't think. I know. He was 12 miles away at that little creek between my daddy's land and your father's place.
How could you know that?
I was there.
That's right. She saw me, all right. Caught me butchering one of her daddy's calves just for something to eat.
Surprised, everyone in the room turned to look at Colt.
If that's true, Susan, why in the world didn't you come forward?
I told her if she told on me for killing that calf, I'd slip into her room one night and slit her throat. She was awful young then. I guess she believed me.
10 years in prison for killing a calf.
Susan, how could you let Colt sit in that prison and not tell somebody?
Because I scared the hell out of her. She thought I would cut her throat. Hell, Vance, don't blame Susan. It was my fault, and I'd just as soon drop it.
Well, there you go. He wasn't even guilty, just like he said. Ain't no reason he can't take the sheriff's job now, right, Roy?
Well, I reckon that's true. How about it, Colt?
Right now, I'm gonna lie around Red Moon's camp till my shoulder heals up. If you find somebody before I get back, go ahead and give it to him.
Two weeks had passed since the town meeting, and Colt's wound was healing nicely under the care of Mary and her grandmother. It was a peaceful time for Colt, a welcome respite from the trouble that preceded it. His only concern was that he'd been captured again, this time by a pretty young half-Cheyenne maiden. And he had to admit that he had no thoughts of escape. Returning from hunting one frosty morning, he was surprised to find a buggy tied up beside Walking Woman's teepee. As he stepped down from the saddle, Mary came out of the lodge to meet him. She was accompanied by a thin, ramrod, straight woman dressed in a long woolen coat, wearing a bonnet that concealed most of a silver-gray bun.
Colt, this is Alice Flynn. She wants to talk to you.
Oh? What about?
About you doing something besides lying around this engine camp. I got the biggest spread in this valley, and I need somebody to run it. I want you to be my partner. What do you say? It beats sheriffing.
Colt looked at Mary, who was beaming happily.
I'll think on it.
Bert said you'd say that. Yes or no?
Colt looked at Mary again.
I reckon.
Range War in Whiskey Hill is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Charles G. West. Published by arrangement with NAL Signet, a member of Penguin Group USA, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Christopher Sheeran, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinolini, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Eric Mesner, Stephen Carpenter, Eva Wilhelm, Gregory Gordon, Thomas Penny, Annette Savard, Tim Carlin, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Bradley Smith, Tim Getman, Tim Pabon, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Yasmin Toisan, Dan Sontag, Kimberly Gilbert, James Keegan, and Alyssa Wilman. Additional Boot Hill Bunch by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Oh Susanna, performed by the Bunkhouse Gals. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferry. If you enjoyed Range War and Whiskey Hill, be sure to listen to the Dead or Alive trilogy and Charles G. West's Duel at Lohawk and Tanner's Law. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action pump titles, well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Graphic Audio presents R.A. Salvatore's masterpiece, The Saga of the First King. 1,000 years before the Demon War, the Abelican Church is beginning its rise over the dark and brutal Samhaste religion. But the rise is not without its battles. In the midst of this turmoil, there is tension between the Lairds of Haunts and rumors that a king is rising to rule them all. All the while, the people of Haunts are being slaughtered by the brutal encroachment of the hated, powering enemy. Only one man can usher forth justice for the people of Haunts. But his rise to power is cloaked in mystery and deceit. He is the Shadow of Haunts, the Masked Man, the giver and taker. Some call him wretched and evil, while others say righteous and just. He is the Highwayman. Be the first to hear the beginning of the epic new saga from fantasy master R.A. Salvatore, the Highwayman. Available now in graphic audio.
Don't think I give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Can Frank Morgan gun down his own flesh and blood? Find out in The Last Gunfighter number 23, Montana Gundown. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.